This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're just coming into the holiday season, and on this segment of Your Legal Rights, we'll talk about divorced or divorcing parents, and they don't necessarily have to have been married, maybe they've just been partners, of young children cooperating and working together to make the holidays happy for their young children. I've got some really significant people who practice family law here with me, even in Honolulu, everybody, believe it or not. But my guests are California Board of Legal Specialization Family Law Certified Specialist Janet Frankel, whose office is in San Francisco, B.J. Fadum, with office in San Jose. Ms. Frankel is also a member of the board of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. National Board of Trial Advocacy Certified Family Law Trial Advocate Thomas Farrell in Honolulu, and Family Law Attorney and Marriage and Family Therapist Valerie Runyon Houghton, whose office is in San Jose. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies specialization in 4 areas of the law. And for those of you who are listening to the live program, I will give the phone number a little bit in about 26 minutes or so, a toll-free number, and you can call in and ask questions. For those of you who get this program delayed and want to hear the entire hour, there's a free podcast which I suggest you might want to put down. I think we're going to be talking about some very important, significant things for divorced people or divorcing people or partners who are separating and have young children, and you might want to hear it again. So there's a free podcast available to you by going to www.kalw.org/RSS, www.kalw.org/RSS. Let me throw this out to you. Tom, are you in Honolulu?
I am. I wonder how I got on the show with all these Californians, but if
well,
it's
I don't
funny,
know.
I went to law school in the Bay Area.
Well, that's the reason you're on the show, because you went to law school in the Bay Area. What do you mean? Tom, it's great to have you. And Janet, you're there, right?
I'm here.
You're in Santa Maria.
I'm in Santa Maria.
That's good.
Heading down the coast.
Let me throw this out to the four of you, and if you would, so that everybody knows who's talking when you plan to talk, give your first name so that people understand which one of you is talking. Before we went on the air, BJ told me, and I was not aware of this because I am not a family law attorney, that Christmas is falling on the weekend. BJ, briefly, what's the problem?
So here's the problem that I'm getting frantic calls about is a lot of either they don't have an order, but one of the standard orders that we have had in place for the holidays over the years has been that we take the 2 weeks of Christmas, we split it in half, one parent gets the first half, another parent gets the second half, and then they alternate per year. And this has been going on fine because the kids would get out of school maybe 5 or 6 days before Christmas. It turns out that it works out where it's kind of split equally. Well, now, because it's on the weekend, the kids are getting out of school a day or two before Christmas. And so it's not really an equal split of the holidays itself. And so people are calling in saying, oh, my God, I didn't realize it was going to happen this way. We usually switch on Christmas Day, and now it's not going to be till a week later. And it's a big shuttle now that what are we going to do, because it caught everybody off guard.
What about our next point?
Go ahead, Janet.
This is Janet.
There's another thing that's happening this year that happens probably just as even less frequently than Christmas falling on a weekend, and that is that the first night of Hanukkah is Christmas Eve this year.
Exactly.
So a lot of times you have families where one parent celebrates Hanukkah and another parent might celebrate Christmas. It happens more often than you might think. And then they can divide up the holidays where the parent celebrating Hanukkah gets that holiday, but that doesn't work this year either.
So what should people do? I mean, you're faced with this also in Honolulu. What should parents do if they don't have a plan where they have mapped out, well, here's what the coming year is, and okay, Christmas is going to be on the weekend, and you're going to have Johnny or Jenny here, and I'll have Johnny or Jenny there. How do you deal with this, Tom?
Well, there's a couple of things that I would tell parents that are in this kind of situation. And the first is that, you know, the day that school lets out is a little bit late to be figuring this out. So what you alluded to earlier, which is sitting down with the school schedules at the beginning of the year and figuring this stuff out, is a pretty good idea. But the other thing, honestly, is that parents need to have a certain amount of flexibility and goodwill to make this thing work. And if they simply are incapable of figuring it out on their own, then the only answer is very clear, specific orders that are incredibly detailed. And I actually write those from time to time. I call it, you know, visitation for dysfunctional families. But most people don't need those kind of orders. Some do, however.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's too many hassles between parents, and orders would be helpful. BJ.
Right, and this, BJ, the problem we have is we may have parents that are getting along at one point, but the orders are really for the parents that are not getting along, and that's what I try and explain to them. So we may have had a situation where for years the parents were getting along and they've been able to cooperate and make sure that the child has experienced the holidays with both sides, but then something may change. There's a factor. A lot of times that's a significant other comes into the life of one of the parents, and it triggers this high conflict again. And all of a sudden, the focus shifts away from the kids, and it's more about, well, I want the kids. I don't want them near your new girlfriend for the holidays. I don't want them with your family, that type of thing. And the kids get completely lost in the shuffle, and they're not cooperating. They're not thinking it through, and they're not thinking, how is this going to be viewed by the children?
I think as attorneys, this is Janet again, we have a responsibility to tell our clients and instruct them that not to use their children as weapons when things like that happen. They have to keep the focus on the child, and it's times like this when, let's say, you don't have an order, the holidays are around the corner, and everything is not how you expected it to be. There's a new partner, or Christmas is on a weekend. That's the time to have the decency and the courage to grow up and treat the other parent with courtesy, at least during the holiday. And what we were talking about before was this tension, I think, that exists for parents between being honest with their children about how pissed off they are, maybe, and pretending that things are just fine. So you're not going to tell your clients, go ahead and pretend everything is just roses. But at the same time, they have to be able to treat one another with decency and respect.
Valerie.
And you know, Janet, this is Tom in Honolulu. All of my clients tell me that they're doing that, and it's the other parent who's causing all the problems.
Let me go for a moment, if you would, to Valerie, who is not only a family law attorney, but a marriage and a family therapist. How would you deal with this? Maybe people are not prepared this year to deal with the weekend of Christmas. How would you deal with this for the future, Valerie? What would you do?
Well, this is a hard one because, first of all, most of what I do is family therapy. Second other thing I do is mediation. And in mediation cases and we do calendar planning at the beginning of the year, and we start at the end of the year and work our way backwards. So all of those types of cases, we've already done the entire calendar year by March 1st.
So you've got something like a written kind of calendar type of agreement?
I sit down with the parents, and we do the entire calendar for the entire year, every year, and it's done by March 1st, period.
I've had situations, Valerie, this is Janet, I've had situations where one party is really good at advanced planning and the other party can barely plan, you know, what to have for breakfast the next day.
Absolutely. And that's why those are the cases where we sit down and we do that together. Now, that's the ideal if it's a mediation case. These other cases about where we're asking people to do what you were talking about, Janet, which is ideal, which is having the decency and the courage, and then finding that balance to be honest and also to be sensitive and take the high road and all of those other lovely qualities. And I've tried a number of things. One is I ask people to please remember the things that we're teaching our children, which is how do we handle the situations when they're having a conflict at school with some of their classmates, and try to ask them to do the same things that we're trying to tell our children. That's one thing. Another thing is to pretend that everything that they're saying and doing is being broadcast live around the globe on CNN, or perhaps the NSA is listening and it's going to be recorded, or
well,
it's going
I
to
think
be...
That's, Valerie, I think that that's less offensive advice than telling them to pretend that everything's fine.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Under a microscope.
Yeah, and this is BJ. And what I tell my clients when they're in a high conflict custody case is, you're now under the microscope. Very similar mm-hmm. to that. So assume that everything, because it may end up showing up in court, then it does. Text messages, emails, voicemail messages. We've all used them in court. So just remember, anything that you say, write, text, may end up in front of a judge in family court. And so be very, very careful how you word certain things to the other parent. Mm-hmm. Or the other problem is, it may be shown to the children.
Yeah.
Even though it's not supposed to. And what is that going to do to the kids?
Tom, let me throw this one at you in Honolulu. I mean, you're dealing with people are people no matter where they are. The laws may be a little bit different from state to state, but basically we're dealing with the same kind of problems, whether you're in California or you're in Kansas, you're in Hawaii, et cetera. Tom, how do you deal with someone who comes to your office and said, oh, my gosh, Christmas is falling on the weekend? My either my partner or my former wife or my former husband, or we're arguing about this. What about, Tom, getting at this point an ex parte order from the court to resolve this? Can you do it?
Well, I'll tell you what. The answer is probably no, because I think I don't know how well equipped your court system is in California to deal with these things, but if it's anything
not
like
not
ours,
well, not well, Tom.
Courts do not move quickly, and oftentimes they simply cannot adjudicate disputes like these, you know, 3-day crises that people come up with in a timely fashion. So the parents are going to have to work it out, or somebody is just going to have their way.
And the kids are going to. This is BJ. And the kids are going to lose. I'm minors counsel. I get appointed by the court to represent the children. And what I hear the kids tell me after these horrible holiday fiascos is just heart-wrenching. And some of them have told me they never want to celebrate Christmas again because it was totally ruined for them. Some of them, because of the year before, are telling me I'm not looking forward to Christmas, which is heartbreaking. And it's all because the parents who claim they were putting the children first, Tom, as you alluded to before, yeah, all the parents are saying, but I'm doing this for my children. You may think you are, but stop and think about it for just a moment, because these kids, it's ruined the holiday for them.
Terrible.
BJ hit on something that's really important, because we were talking a moment ago about things that we tell our clients to motivate them to do the right thing, and basically these are things that are in their self-interest, like pretend the judge is watching you. But the other thing that BJ is talking about is to try to appeal to clients to do the things that are in their children's interest, because, you know, so many of these folks just have no concept of the damage that they are doing to their children. And believe me, they are. They just don't recognize it. We had an 11-year-old whose parents were a high conflict divorce couple. This kid hung himself in the garage.
Oh my!
Oh, Dad.
Oh my!
I've had cases with a 4-year-old in therapy. What is a 4-year-old doing in therapy?
That's terrible.
Right.
Terrible.
And this is BJ. And I had a child that I was representing. Was not even 16 yet, and came to me begging me, how do I get emancipated? I want to get away from both of them.
And how old was this person?
She wasn't even 16 yet.
Not even, oh my. Let me stop all four of you from talking at this point and just let people know. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're trying to do something for parents of young children who maybe have separated, whether they've been married or not. Maybe they're divorced. Maybe they're divorcing. Trying to set up some information for you so that you can make the holidays happy for your children. So I want to let you know who's here. And then, by the way, for those of you who are listening to the live program, which we do in the San Francisco Bay Area, we do it on the internet at www.klw.org. And the full hour is uplifted to the NPR satellite for national distribution. But here's our toll-free number. If you're listening to the program live on Wednesday, November 23rd, in about 15 minutes, I'll be asking you to call in if you would like to. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, if you have questions or comments for my guests. For those of you who are going to be listening to the live program on November 30th, we will have our usual monthly Call a Lawyer night for calls off the air, where you can talk with attorneys off the air. You might want to jot down that number. Whether you listen to the live program or not, you're welcome to call in. It's California time, 7 to 8 p.m., 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. My guests on this segment of Your Legal Rights are family law attorney and marriage and family therapist Valerie Runyon-Houghton, California Board of Legal Specialization Family Law Specialists B.J. Fadum, B.J. Depends on which side of the family.
Exactly.
And Janet Frankel. Janet's also a member of the board, a board member of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And we have in Honolulu, if he's gotten off his surfboard, I'm not sure he has yet because it's a lot earlier there, is National Board of Trial Advocacy Certified Family Law Trial Advocate Tom Farrell, whose office is in Honolulu. So let me throw this out to you. What are you finding is the most, Tom, from your standpoint, what are you finding that's the most frequent violation that one parent is making with respect to the other parent that could be harmful to the child?
Probably the one that is the worst, I don't know if it's the most frequent, is violating the custody and visitation orders that are in effect, either. And this is particularly because in Hawaii we have a lot of parents that are geographically separated. They either live on different islands or, you know, one parent's here and one parent's in the mainland U.S. And so either the kid is supposed to go visit on the mainland and the parent here doesn't send them, or vice versa. Or the other end of the visit, the kid's supposed to come home and the parent that had the long-distance visit hangs on to the kid and doesn't send the child home. Mm-hmm. And those are major crises. And typically, they are accompanied by accusations of some sort of child abuse that is occurring in the other parent's home.
Well, how do you then deal with this, Tom, in at least Honolulu?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, people need to understand that violations of court orders involving visitation are criminal offenses.
Mm-hmm.
So you're risking getting prosecuted for a crime if you don't send the child or send the child back.
Is that the same in California, BJ?
Yes, I mean it could be a contempt of court, but the problem we run into is twofold. And Tom was talking about a very big problem here in California as well, because they do a lot of international interstate jurisdiction. One parent may be traveling for their portion of the Christmas holiday to someplace else, or they're supposed to come to California with the parent. And the custody orders may not be originally out of California, so all of a sudden they come to California for the 1 week with the parent, and as Tom said, they'll make allegations of abuse or whatever, run into court for emergency jurisdiction custody orders to keep the child here, and then try and fight to change the jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. I'll get where they'll be taken to another country or withheld in California. They've come from a different country to visit for the holidays, and then all of a sudden they won't return the child back to the country of what we call their habitual residence. So this game playing is done a lot over the holidays because that's the longest time that the parents have for travel other than summer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when a lot of these what we call parental child abductions happen.
I would say, Janet.
Go ahead.
If you already have a court order in place, you need to follow it. And I mean, that would be true at all times, but especially in the holidays when the temptation to engage in some kind of self-help is so tangible. you know, you just want to, well, I'll just keep this child, or maybe even secretly you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm going to have little Johnny for a week and a half, and that can be when I actually plan my big run, and I'm going to keep little Johnny and make allegations of abuse so that he doesn't ever have to go back to that horrible other parent.
Right.
But really what you're doing is you're not paying attention to what that's going to do to little Johnny and what his experience of Christmas for the rest of his life may be like. So it's not a time to engage in self-help. It's not a time to run to the court and hope that they'll act as some kind of super parent and change everything just because that's what you've been dreaming of.
And this is BJ, and I totally agree with Jan, because if anything's going to ruin the holidays for that child, it's going to be that. And one of the things that can help to prevent that is if the child is going to another state or another country for the visitation, is to have the custody order registered in that other state for enforcement.
Oh.
And I advise clients of that, especially if it's going to be a visit to another country. What you want to do,
mirror orders,
exactly,
right, in other countries.
Exactly. We want to get a mirror order in the other country.
How,
now
how
some
do you,
countries
how do you
won't.
How do you do that though? It sounds like a lot of effort or
it
red,
could,
red tape.
It could be. It depends on the country.
I see.
So some countries will not do mirror orders. I will tell you right now, India will not. Mm-hmm. Pakistan won't. But a lot of the other countries, especially if they're a Hague signatory, will in fact. You get an attorney from the other side. I usually help my clients facilitate that. We're Skyping all the time with different countries and facilitate getting a mirror order in the other country. If it's in a different state, it's very, very easy. You go and get an attorney in that state and register the order for enforcement.
Let me just mention, Tom, before you come in, you're next, but let me just mention this. This is Chuck Finney, the host of Your Legal Rights. I have four very experienced persons on the program talking about things that you as parents, if you have young kids and you're estranged from either your partner or you're divorced or you're divorcing, they're talking about things that you really need to think about very carefully so as not to really mess up your kids, help them to have a happy holiday season. And whether you're listening to the full hour or if you listen in other stations in California, there are 15 other stations in California that air the half hour. That's next week. If you want to listen to the entire program, wherever you are, there's a free podcast. All you have to do is go to www.kalw.org/RSS. www.kalw.org/RSS, and you can listen to the entire hour of the program, which will include calls from listeners, which we're going to get in hopefully just a few minutes. Tom, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you were asking a while back, Chuck, what are some of the things that parents do to torture their children during the holidays? Although they don't seem to recognize they're doing that at the time, but one of the things that we see a lot of is parents take the opportunity of lengthy visitations, Christmas is one of them, to undermine the other parent's rules. So, you know, for example, your 12-year-old daughter is with you for the first half of the Christmas break, you take her to the tattoo parlor and sign the parental consent for her to get a tattoo, even though you know quite well that the other parent is absolutely against your 12-year-old having ink. Or you give your kid a puppy when you know darn well that over at the other parent's house, you know, the rules of the building prohibit dogs and cats. And so now the kid goes back to the other parent and has to give up the puppy. I mean, it's amazing how inventively cruel people can be in this time of year.
And intentionally so, really, isn't it? I mean, it's intentional cruelty. BJ?
Well, I was going to say, and sometimes they'll entice the pet. What Tom was saying is, well, you can only have the pet when you're here with me.
I see.
Because you can keep the pet here, you can't have it at mom's, or you can't have it at dad's.
So bad-mouthing the other parent, of course.
Absolutely, undermining the other parent.
Undermining, yeah.
I think that this is Janet, that bad-mouthing the other parent is the thing that I see as the most insidious and frequent offense between parents who are having hostilities. You can't imagine the things that people say, horrible things they'll say about the other parent just before they're about to go spend their holiday time with the other parent, before the child is supposed to go. And then they okay, go have a good time.
The kid knows
when they come back, they're then going to get the third degree about what happened over there. And that sort of destroys a child's ability to enjoy anything. They might feel guilty enjoying themselves at the other parent's home. But, you know, Valerie, I was going to ask you, because you were talking about, you know, what you can advise in, I also do mediation, but you were talking about what you can advise clients to do. I was thinking about your input as a therapist. I find that children do best when they know what to expect. You lay out what's going to happen, they know what's going to happen, and then that's what happens. And you talk about it all along, and you have some kind of consistency.
Janet, let me get Valerie to respond. We have 1.5 minute left of the statewide version, and then we're going to end the half hour, and I'll give the listeners the toll-free number. Valerie, you have 1.5 minute.
I do child-inclusive mediation, which isn't done very much in the U.S., but it is done in Australia and New Zealand. And it is a way of including the children in the process with the parents' permission. So they actually have a way of giving some input at the front end. The other thing is I do include the children, and then I do have the children get some feedback from the parents as we put the plan together. And then we periodically do check-in sessions with them.
All right, let me give you our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. I'm inviting you, whoever you are, if you're listening to the program live on Wednesday, November 23rd, Thanksgiving Eve, we're doing this program live, and here is the number, toll-free, 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. In California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They will do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area that you're having the problem with. And for a half an hour consultation, with minor exception, you will pay $25 to $35 to meet with the attorney. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Let me give you that toll-free number again. What I have found in doing this program, by the way, for 32 years, is that people are very hesitant to call in on a family law program, because there's a lot of problems that people have when they're in divorce or they're divorced, etc. They don't want the other person to know their voice, their name, etc. So if you do have a question, you have a comment, you have something that you would like to ask or present to my guests, use a phony name. And here's the toll-free number. Yeah, no, I'm serious. This may make a difference. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And here's who we have. From Honolulu, National Board of Trial Advocacy, Certified Family Law Trial Advocate, Tom Farrell. And, of course, his office is in Honolulu. Here with me in the studio is family law attorney and marriage and family therapist, Valerie Runyon-Houghton, whose office is in San Jose. Also with me in the studio here is B.J. Fadum, I finally got it right, huh? Depending on which side of the family we're talking about.
Correct.
BJ is also a certified specialist in family law about the California Board of Legal Specialization. And in Santa Maria, Janet Frankel, a certified specialist in family law, is there. She's also a member of the, she's a board member of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. So if you have a question, a comment, a concern for my guests, please don't hesitate. And here we have something that's been brought into the studio by my assistant, Martin, and here's what it is. What can also happen is that the child, if he's smart enough, can play off one parent against the other. That gives the child a lot of power to manipulate both parents. Is allowing that child to have that kind of power harmful to the child? Question mark. Who wants to start?
That never happens.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
This is BJ, and I've actually got one of the minors I represent has figured that out at a very young age. And when the parents aren't speaking, and has learned to manipulate the system to their advantage. And Valerie can answer this better, but you allow these children to manipulate and empower that much. It's bad enough when they become teenagers. Just look out when you've given them that power on top of it.
Mm-hmm. That is so true.
I would agree with that. I've seen that happen too. And, you know, the other thing, though, that I think is important is, we're talking about what happens to these kids when they become adults, is that these children who have come out of high conflict divorce cases, particularly where parents have engaged in some of these bad behaviors that we've described earlier in the show, they manifest the problems in adulthood. And frequently, by the way, the parent who was trying to turn the child against the other parent is the one who winds up being rejected by that child when the kid reaches adulthood. It's kind of like, gee, you know, that was great when she was a kid, but now she hates me. I wonder why.
Mm. Boy, that's sad. That's really sad. Janet, were you about to say something?
Well, I was thinking about children manipulating their parents and how really that's how they learn how to negotiate everything in life. Mm-hmm. And as the parents of these children, you're their first victims. They're going to try everything on you. Mm-hmm. And they're shameless and fearless in the things that they'll try to get you to do what they want, or not even what they want, but they'll do it just because they want to see what they can make you do. So as a parent, you have to be aware of that and not let your children control the situation. They don't really want to control the situation. They just want to test you.
Test the parents. Okay. Yeah. Valerie, please.
This is Valerie. The moral development of children is a slow process. And
I think the moral development of a lot of adults is a slow process, frankly.
I'm morally developing myself.
Yes.
Yeah. And most of us, the definitive writer about all of that is a guy named Kohlberg. Cognitive development and moral development go hand in hand. Most of us top out about level 4 out of 6. But you see it in toddlers. Toddlers, you know, they have no moral sense other than, you know, my turn, your turn, that's about it. But a sense of fairness is still pretty sketchy in toddlers. Teenagers, that's the second toddlerhood. So if they are able to get rewarded for exploiting, that really miscues them. And so then what you end up doing is it's like puppy training. So you're ending up giving them kibbles for misbehaving. And that is exactly what Tom was talking about, and that continues on into adulthood. So we're training them to become antisocial, and that continues to play itself out. So what I do when I see parents doing that is I just say, I know that this seems really just fine and benign right now, but when they're just telling you, hey, you don't mind if I drop out of school right now and move in with Bobby, who dropped out, and, you know, he's doing drugs, but that's because nobody understood him. But I've been running my own life now since I was 12, and you don't mind, but I'm still running my life, and so now I just see you later. That won't be so much fun. So when parents start to break out into a cold sweat, then they start to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My favorite story is the parents don't talk to each other, and the teenage girl tells daddy that she's at mom's house and mommy that she's at dad's house, and of course she's not at either of their houses. She's at her boyfriend's house.
Right. Yeah. This is BJ. Yeah. The old game where they used to play that they were at the friend's house. They don't have to in the high conflict cases because they can just play the parents off each other. And usually the parent that thinks that they are quote unquote winning the custody battle is actually going to be the loser in the long run. Tom, as you said, they may be the rejected parent in the long run once the child grows a little bit older.
I think that the children, this is Janet, I think that the children really want boundaries from their parents. They're testing them, but they want them.
Agree.
They need them. You got to push back. You got to say no. And you have to control yourself. You know, you can't use the court as a weapon. I think that it might impress the listeners that there are four experienced family law attorneys here on the line, and all of us have said, no, you're not going to go get a new order on an ex parte basis for the holidays this year. It's just not going to happen. You got to plan in advance. You got to set boundaries. So
And I think the other boundaries, this is BJ, especially during the holidays, because the children are going to be with extended family, that it's up to the parent to control the disparaging remarks of the extended family. Don't let grandma...
You're talking about, yeah, the grandparents.
Yeah, grandma, uncles.
Uncles and aunts.
Don't let them start bad-mouthing the other parent to the child, saying, oh, did your mother make you do that again? I'm so sorry. Or, you know, oh, I know your father is always mean, that type of thing. And that pits the families against each other. So it's up to the parent to say that's on a...
Don't let the child do it either.
Right.
You know, I just wanted to go back to
what
Janet was saying earlier. Yeah. And I think, Tom, you touched on this as well, which is you talked about the puppy and some of these other things. Some of the stuff that I see that is a little bit more subtle is, okay, well, I know that your other parent won't let you watch these kind of movies, but we're cool. So you can watch that over here. Or I'm going to let you stay up late, and I'm going to let you have access to these kinds of films, or I'm going to let you do some of these things that, by the way, don't tell the other parent that I'm letting you do this stuff, and gives the child access to some of these things that are a lot harder for a custody evaluator to set limits with. The court doesn't know how to handle it, and the child is going, wow.
Well, not only that, and this is BJ, it does also promote that the child has to start keeping secrets from the other parent, which is the worst thing you can do to a child.
And
exactly, and when they get caught out, as they often do, and the other parent is that they kept the secret from is highly irritated with the child, that doesn't end well.
No, because the end result, as BJ again, is they get outed, and then the parent says, I told you not to tell your mother or your father about that, and then it creates a real stressful situation for the child.
Todd, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Todd, are you there?
Oh, hello.
Hi, is this Todd?
No, this is Honor.
Oh, Anna, I'm sorry. We had you. Didn't we just talk with you or not?
No.
Oh, I'm so sorry. There's a hum in your phone,
Anna.
I'm
sorry. I have a really bad phone.
No, this is no good. I'm sorry. The hum is just, it's not working at all. I'm terribly sorry. Try again. Try calling again if you can. But that hum is just a...
Okay, bye.
Yeah, if you would, if you don't mind. Could we have Todd now? Todd, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Go ahead, Todd.
I have a question. What if a son, in a dad situation, where if the dad disinherits the son with a will late in life because they have a disagreement, and then feels bad and wants to take it back, but in the interim, because he's drafted the will, a cousin is named as both executor and sole heir, and this cousin acknowledges that change of heart but somehow didn't get the trust signed reflecting that change of heart. And so then it just goes to probate. How might that play out?
Well, this is really an estate planning issue. I don't think it's BJ, do you have some comment for Todd?
I can answer the question. Unfortunately, unless there's another writing that indicates the change of heart, you're going to be stuck with the trust. That doesn't stop the cousin who was named as the executor from, with the permission of the other beneficiaries, from distributing the trust differently. But for the most part, once the trustor passes away, that trust becomes irrevocable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the will. There's
still, if you're going to the Tom in Honolulu, if you're going to change your estate plan, don't die until you get that taken care of.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing with a will.
But if
I
wonder
if the son got disinherited over a holiday dispute.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. It's just basically, you know, the ups and downs of a relationship. Then it gets fixed, but in the interim, that he passes away, and then the cousin gets named as both executor and sole heir.
And unfortunately, if the cousin is willing to do whatever with the estate, that's up to them. But if they don't, unfortunately, you're pretty much stuck. At least in the state of California, under the probate code, you're going to be stuck with the will.
And there's no challenge to like undue influence or
you would have to show undue influence, but it doesn't sound like that. That's very difficult to prove, and it's by clear and convincing evidence, and it would be very difficult to prove, especially if there was an up and down relationship.
Todd, let me suggest something to you, because obviously this is bothering you. I would suggest, because I'm a real believer in people trying to educate themselves. Board of Legal Specialization has a specialty, estate planning, trusts, and probate law. I would suggest that you might want to contact the Board of Legal Specialization and find out who the specialists are in San Francisco. I'll give you the phone number. I'll also give you the website that you can go to. And I think it would be worth it for you, since this is obviously a very serious matter, to sit down with an estate planning specialist and see what thoughts and what direction you may go. Here's the phone number. I hope you have something to write with. 415-538-2100. And you can go to the website on the internet, www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left corner of the screen for legal specialists. Click that on and put in San Francisco, and then you'll find out who the certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law are. And then contact one or more and find out, what's it going to cost me to have an initial consultation, etc. But I think you need to do this.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Glad you called. Take care. By the way, everybody, although we have another probably 12 minutes of the program, I want to, since we're doing this program live on Wednesday, November 23rd, I want to wish you all happy Thanksgiving. I hope it is a pleasant Thanksgiving for you. And if there are, let's say, parents who have separated or in divorce or are divorcing, try to, with what my guests are talking about, it's like talking about politics. Don't talk about politics tomorrow, and try to
forever.
Never talk about politics, and try to take some of the thoughts and statements that my guests have given you with you for your family Thanksgiving dinner. All right, we're going to talk now with Stephanie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having this service on in regards to this very touchy and emotional subject. I have a question in regards to how a separation where infidelity played a great part might affect the morality of the children as they grow older. My estranged spouse and I separated because of an infidelity, and I've shielded the children from this aspect of the separation for obvious reasons, until I found out that my children were basically being exposed to this other woman and her children while they're with their father.
I see, yeah.
And I, you know, we both remain civil to each other, my estranged spouse and I, but I'm fighting with wanting myself to raise my children with a very clear idea of what I believe is right and wrong, and for them to grow up with an idea that if you do decide to marry, it's an oath that you make and that you do your utmost to stay together, as opposed to what's happened here. So is it advisable to somehow explain to the children that Dad and I have different senses of what morality means and what ethics are? Or should I just leave it alone with no explanation?
Stephanie, let me ask you this before Valerie responds. Have you sought the advice of a professional, either a marriage or family therapist, on this?
I am going to a therapist, and I think I felt so strongly in our sessions about letting my children know what I feel is right and wrong that she has hesitated to give me her opinion, but it is something that I will.
Well, let me get Valerie to respond. I mean, this is something, Stephanie, that is not simply resolved in a radio program like this.
Sure.
Although it is our best interest to be helpful, but I think if your therapist is afraid to tell you what he or she feels about the situation that's going on, perhaps so that it may annoy you and you won't come back, which I think is a big mistake both for you and the therapist. But Valerie, what comments do you have for Stephanie?
Oh.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Stephanie, do you have boys or girls?
Boys, two boys.
Two boys.
Yeah.
How old are they?
3 and 9.
Okay, mm-hmm. 3 and 9.
Yeah.
Okay, so 3 and 9, they're going to love their dad beyond all endurance.
Exactly.
Okay, so how to set yourself up to be the bad guy 101 is for you to say one little peep negative about their dad,
right,
ever. So if you take it upon yourself, and I've been doing family therapy for 40 years, mm-hmm, 11 months, and 19 days.
19
I could,
days.
I'm not kidding. And I can tell you.
She looks damn young. I don't know. I
that's because I live right.
She started as a child.
But I'm telling you, this is the highway to hell.
Mm.
If you take it upon yourself to do that, to let your children know about the morality, you are going to really regret it.
Mm.
And your 9-year-old, adolescence begins at 10. Mm. It doesn't begin at 13. And you are going to look like the skank of the yank if you do that. You need to hold their father up in the highest esteem, and they will gradually, over time, figure out that he's not quite perfect. But if you breathe one negative thought about their father to them, you will lose. And so will they. So will they.
Stephanie, this is Janet. I think what your therapist might not want to say, all of the four of us are willing to say, which is what we think about it. And it, to, in my view, what the best thing that you can do for your children is to tell them that you're happy that their father has someone that he's happy spending time with and that he enjoys spending time with. And, you know, do your best to just encourage them to want their father to be happy, because I totally agree with Valerie. You can't be the one to point out that you think that what he's doing or has done is wrong.
This is Tom in Honolulu, and trying to keep these children from having any contact with his girlfriend, new significant other, whatever, is also going to be a real loser. Because you know, basically, I mean, you're setting them up for a situation where they have to either he has to hide this person from them, or they have to hide their contact with her from you, and it's just not going to work.
That's a bad road.
Essentially, what you're telling the children is your father is a bad person because he's with someone else. Well, you can feel that way, but you know, if you insist on communicating that to your kids, why don't you just go get a 2x4 and whack them upside the head a couple of times real hard, because we can fix that.
and
the psychological damage that is done to children when parents start turning them against the other parent.
And this is BJ, and I've had actually a situation similar to this in a case. There's no reason for the children to know that Dad was with this woman before you separated.
Yeah.
There's no reason whatsoever for the children to know that. And I've had parents that have done this, and it's backfired big time to them, both with the children and with the courts.
Well, best of luck to you, Stephanie. We're going to move on. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope it's a pleasant day for you, and I hope the holidays are good ones for you. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Nancy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy.
Yeah, I thought maybe somebody needs a comment from someone who's gone through this. My kids are now 43 and 49. They turned out just great. Their crazy father and I divorced when they were 2 and 6.
Did you refer to your former
husband as a crazy dad?
Yeah, to the kids. Did you say that to them?
I didn't have to.
Oh, you didn't have to.
They figured it out really quick.
Okay,
but,
go ahead,
you know,
Nancy.
I'll tell you something. I was blessed with great kids and with a man who came into their lives right away. Who was just a terrific stepdad. Mm-hmm. And we provided them with a really stable home. They saw their father, who lived about 5 blocks away. Every weekend, he was not an evil man. He was just nutty and irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very rough for many years. And I told the kids, you know, your father is just nutty. You just have to put up with it. You live with me most of the time. Your home is stable. If you want to see him, fine. If you don't want to see him, you know. And my daughter, after the age of 12, never talked to her father again.
So in other words, are your children, who are 43 and 49 years of age, they have no relationship with their natural father at all? Is that what
Well, my daughter does. Well, he's been dead for 3 years.
Well, I mean, before...
My daughter never had one.
I see.
No, not after the age of 12.
My son had
one off and on, and he said, well, you know, it's my dad.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure you shouldn't point out to your kids that, their father is maybe not such a terrific person.
Well, did he have a mental problem or was... No, don't go into a lot of detail. Yes or no, did he have a mental problem or was he just irresponsible?
He was irresponsible.
Okay.
And he did have, as his mother said about him, he had the finest mind of the 12th century.
Well, let me get some comments from Valerie on this. Nancy, thank you for calling.
Sure.
And I want to get some comments. Valerie, in response to what Nancy has talked about in terms of she's taken another view on this, that you want to tell your kids that your dad is crazy, et cetera. What thoughts do you have about this?
For example, most of the families that I work with, when I started getting involved in family law work, I'd already been doing family therapy. So I see a lot of children who are adults who stopped seeing their parents because as soon as they had any kind of financial independence, they voted with their feet and stopped having any contact with their parents.
With
both parents. So they said, I'm out of here. Both my parents are coconuts, and I don't want to have anything to do with them. So I've spent a lot of my career putting those families back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because of my work with hospice, and so that was a long time ago. And that's where I came from. So my focus has always been about prevention, if I have the chance, or to come at it from the angle of, all right, how do we repair the damage? So I always have that in the back of my mind. Children will gradually figure out on their own. For example, children put their parents on pedestals not because we, and I'm a parent too, not because we deserve it, but because that's what children do.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually they start figuring out that we're not perfect. That fall from grace needs to be very gradual.
Yeah.
And if it's too fast, and we plummet to earth, that's devastating for children.
This is BJ. The other problem that we run into is what the parent doesn't realize. If they're saying anything negative about the other parent, the children know half of themselves is that parent.
Mm-hmm.
They
exactly.
are half that parent. So you're telling me half of me is crazy. I'm going to start and these kids start talking to me that I represent, like, well, my mom says my dad is just stupid, so I must be stupid too, at least half stupid.
Tom, what comments do you have on this?
Well, the other thing that's a problem here is sometimes kids start even internalizing this and blaming themselves for their parents' dysfunctional relationship.
Very true.
It must be my fault some way. But to get back to your caller's question, you know, I'm happy that her children managed to do well in life, or at least it sounds like they did. But, you know, not having a relationship with a parent for apparently decades doesn't entirely sound to me like a successful and happy adulthood. It seems like something is missing there.
I would have to second that, Tom. This is Janet. Nancy, I think you're extremely fortunate that your children, especially your daughter, are well-adjusted and wonderful people, given that she had no relationship whatsoever with her father. Obviously, we don't know all the facts here, but to not have a relationship with your father from the time that you're 12, to me, that's exactly the age when children start to realize that their parents maybe aren't as wonderful as they thought they were or hoped they were. And that's an important time to maintain that relationship. And so I certainly hope and I believe you that your children turned out wonderful and that everything is for the best. But I think you may just have been lucky there.
Tom, we have about half a minute left in the program. In a few seconds, what comments do you have for the audience?
Well, you know, I think what people need to do, especially in the holiday season, is suck it up, so to speak, and I'm not referring to consumption of holiday beverages. Take the high road. Try to be fair and reasonable with the other parent, even if the other parent is not, in your opinion, being fair and reasonable with you. And realize that you're doing it not because you want to be a martyr of some sort, but because you're helping your children when you do that. And that they're the most important thing. If you truly can see through your own emotional needs and put your children's needs first, you can do that.
We've run out of time. Yeah. I want to thank you all very much. I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. And I want to thank you very much for joining us in Hawaii. I envy you there, Tom Farrell, in Hawaii, certified family law trial advocate by the Board of National Board of Trial Advocacy. And Valerie, lovely to have you here in the studio with me, family law attorney and marriage and family therapist Valerie Runyon-Houghton, whose office is in San Jose. And Janet, thank you for joining us from wherever you may be. You came over very well. Janet Frankel is a certified specialist in family law. Her office is in San Francisco, but she's traveling for Thanksgiving. And finally, B.J. Fatum, certified specialist in family law. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck. Happy holidays to everybody.
Wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, our program will be on landlord-tenant, national Airbnb, and subsidized housing laws, disputes, and issues. My guests will be Jessica Chilek, a landlord-tenant attorney, and Tad Devlin, a business and Airbnb and subsidized housing attorney. And also next week on November 30th is our Call a Lawyer night, our live Call a Lawyer night, 800-525-9917. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the NPR satellite production of the program. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Join us next time on Your Legal Rights on your local station. I'm Chuck Finney.